sack? Is that all you get for your money? And if that's what you have in mind, yeah, if that's what you're all about, good luck moving up, 'cause I'm moving out.
Good morning and welcome to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. This is Mark Carr, team member of the Becky Ivins Real Estate Team, here with Becky Ivins. How are you doing this morning?
Good morning. I am in such a good mood today.
Really?
Last night, I'm going to mention this to you guys because I have not ever been to a better concert.
Oh, you went to the Philharmonic, Billy Joel.
The music of Billy Joel by Mike Cavanaugh.
Uh-huh.
And I want to tell you, it was the most energetic performance. Now, we did have second row seats.
Fancy pants.
I know, right? But it was affordable, you know? And we have season tickets to the Oklahoma City Phil pop series.
Mm-hmm.
It was, the reason I mention it is because there is one performance tonight.
Marissa and I are going.
Oh, are you really?
We did. And so I went on and looked to see how much ticket, and I was surprised at how reasonable, and we have lower tickets. They were really reasonably priced. I'm glad to hear it was great, because we had, you know, I thought, well, this could be really, really good, or it may be boring. It may be a little stuffy.
Well, the Oklahoma City Phil, to begin with, they are fantastic. We're very fortunate. And our maestro, mm-hmm, did his very best to be maestro-ish and stand there and just be standing there. He couldn't do it, man. He'd have to shake a leg or something because of the beat and the rhythm of the music. It was spectacular.
So a couple years back, Marissa and I saw Billy Joel in concert down in Dallas. And we were up in the highest seats at the Rangers Stadium.
Uh-huh.
And it was still spectacular.
Yeah.
Like, he was great.
We had the when Billy Joel and Elton John.
Oh my gosh, that's a dream.
Here
yeah.
in Oklahoma City, we got tickets for everybody, and it was a fun night.
Oh, that's a great night. So you're in a great mood today, and I'm be ready for tonight. And I'm in a great mood because of our guest. I love every time Dean Riddell from SWBC Mortgage is with us.
Well, and we're talking mortgages today, but we're talking more than mortgages. We're talking credit. We're talking cash. We're talking appraisals. We're talking square footage. There's a lot to talk about when we talk about mortgages. So
there is a lot to it. And if you want to join in the conversation, you can give us a call at 405-840-1000. That's 840-1000.
So, Dean, what's the first topic you want to throw out there?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. Always enjoy this because, you know, it's what I do and what I think all three of us do is talk, teach, and educate, because there's so many unknowns out there that people need to turn to movers. They need to call us before they ever find the house and kind of understand how it works. So I appreciate you letting me join you this morning. So I had a call yesterday. Don't know the individual. Basically, he was called me from a friend and said, you know, can you help me? And I said, what's going on? I've purchased a home, 2,600 square feet, according to the MLS. Inspections have been done. Hasn't been finalized, getting close. Appraisal's been done. It has met sales price.
Okay.
And we've determined the home is 2,000 square feet, not 2,600 square feet.
So the appraisal came back at 2,000, but the MLS said it was 2,600.
And the only thing that I know that he says, the MLS or the county records referenced including garage as living space.
So did he look up the county records, and the county records show 2,600
correct.
Feet?
Yes, 2,600.
Okay.
So the dilemma is, it met sales price.
Okay. Well, here's the deal. Okay. First of all, realtors have the integrity to quote the right square footage, even if somebody else makes a mistake, because we can quote square footage as our source of, we can quote the courthouse records, the assessor's records as our source for square footage. But anybody that sold more than three or four houses ought to be able to walk through a house and tell whether it's 2,000 or 2,600 square feet. And the drawing, the footprint of it that's on the courthouse records, shows where the square footage is. So this probably was 2,000 square feet in the home, 600 square foot garage. Garage space is not living space.
Agree.
So was this during his inspection period?
See, I think the inspection, I think that has expired. I think that has ended.
Yeah, there's a time limit mm-hmm. in our contracts that allows for investigations, inspections, and reviews. So square footage is clearly spelled out in there. It's about number 11 or 12, I think, on the list of things you can inspect, investigate, and review. So if you're curious about the footage or you want to be sure you're purchasing the right square footage, measure it and measure it during your inspection time.
But what if you're not concerned about it? Or what if you don't know that answer? You know what I'm saying? What if you think it's 2,600 square feet? You know what I'm saying? I mean, the typical
home buyer
may not know the difference of a 2,000 versus 2,600.
But if you've looked at four or five homes and you're looking at 2,600 square feet homes, you should be able to notice that this one's missing a couple of rooms.
What confuses me a little with your story, Dean, is typically it comes down to the appraisal. Like if it's ends up less square footage, typically has a lower sales price.
So they probably
value.
Yeah.
Well, but there's that some acreage with it.
Okay.
20 acres with it.
Okay. There. See, I'm thinking something's missing in the story, because it is harder for appraise value. A square footage is a little bit different when you're on acreage, right, Becky?
Well, the thing is that it's still square footage, but there's value given to the acreage.
Yeah. Right.
And any outbuildings that you have on the acreage. And, you know, if you've got a string fence with just post hanging over as opposed to a five-strand barbed wire fence, that's going to make a little difference too. So everything has a value. But I will tell you, he probably got a decent buy if it appraised, because if it doesn't, there have to be comparable properties.
Yeah. And that's my inclination, too, because if it's still met, in fact, it came in, I think, $2,500 greater than the sales price. So that tells, and in my eyes, in our world, this is a sore spot or a soapbox for me, is most appraisers, as you know, meet sales price, which is all they're called to do. I mean, they have a contract, and they know if a home, they've got an order and it's worth $200, where the sales price is, and the home is worth $210, $220. You may not see $210, $220 on that appraisal, which is my soapbox, because I want to know what the value is if I'm buying a home. But in an appraiser's eyes, why do I need to hang myself out at $210 or $220?
Right.
Did it meet $200?
And the appraisers, in a little bit of defense of an appraiser, they are asked to justify the price.
Right.
Now, sometimes they go over, like in this particular mm-hmm. instance, because they could not justify that price. They couldn't say, oh, this is worth $200, when every one of their comps was a little bit more.
Totally agree.
But somehow, and they have to give credit to the buyer and the seller, they had a meeting of the minds as to what that property was worth on the open market. And it was determined it's worth $200 because that's what it sold for. But somehow it doesn't work that way when the buyer and seller agree on a price of $200 and then it appraises for $180.
Right.
They don't give as much weight to what that buyer, appraisers don't seem to give that much credit to the buyer to determine value then.
Right.
So the good news for the guy that called you is he probably got a good buy on that property. He obviously felt like it was the right size or he wouldn't have purchased it.
Right.
So he can quit beating himself up on that one because it turned out fine.
Based on that, And land probably carried it. So, you know, the acreage, I'm sure the 20 acres probably helps immensely.
Do they still have the 70% value for the house on acreages? I'm sure that's probably still a rule.
It's still a rule, and I'm not sure it's 70 anymore. I know they were changing that, but it was 70. So what Becky's talking about is, you know, if the acreage carried 70% of the value and the home was or less than 30, then you had an issue because basically the land was carrying the value for what the individual was doing.
Right. Then you can go get a farm home loan.
Right.
Which carries, then you kind of separate it out.
Yes.
As to the land, you get a different loan on your land than kind of a homeowner conforming loan on the house.
Right.
And we'll be talking about that and other kinds of loans when we come back on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000 KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. Becky and I are here with our money man, Dean Riddell. Dean, what's your license number?
NMLS number 196-895.
We are now compliant.
Okay.
And let me explain that. I mean, I think that's good to know for the listeners is when the housing collapse happened, regulators get involved, should have got involved, they got involved. Some good things, some bad things. And basically came down and said, if you're an independent mortgage banker, in essence, you're not employed by a bank or a credit union, every lender, myself, Matt, we have to pass a state and national test. Okay? If you work for a bank or credit union, you don't have to because the bank or the credit union carries that liability for you. So it was a gruesome test. It was ugly. It was hard. I'm not a good test taker. But it validated our knowledge to what we do for a living every day.
Right.
Interestingly, you know, and this is great stuff, is I knew two contacts at Department of Consumer Credit. They are our regulating body. And through that window 12 years ago, independent mortgage bankers who could not pass the test, where did they go to work? Bank or credit union.
Wow.
Think about that. Where do a lot of people go who bank with ABC and they want to buy a house? What is their initial reaction to do?
Well, they go to that.
ABC.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Wow.
Interesting. Mm-hmm.
If you want to join the conversation, you can give us a call at 405-840-1000. That's 840-1000.
Let's talk a little bit about what requirements the property has. When you go through underwriting, a lot of folks don't understand you need three major pieces of information to get your loan approved. You've got your buyer's credit, employment history, assets, that kind of thing.
Income, right.
Okay. So you've got the buyer's qualification. Then you've got the property qualification, which is the appraisal the property has to appraise and qualify for the mortgage. And then you've got title. You have to have a title commitment to get clear title to the property. So all three of those things have to go through underwriting at the same time, and all three have to pass.
Right.
So for inspections, what does a mortgage company require on inspections for a house?
So define inspections. Are you thinking as in a home inspection, or are you thinking from the appraiser side of it? Because on the home inspection side, 9 times out of 10, we don't get that home inspection result. We don't need it.
Okay.
Okay. On the appraiser side of it, he will do the appraisal. His primary focus is determined value. And does it meet FHA requirements or, you know, conventional Fannie Mae requirements? But from a, let's use the roof as an example.
Okay.
He may make an observation that the roof has issues. He's not an expert to say it's got to be replaced, but he may make it a requirement. I need a Robbins Roofing to come out there or a roofer to come out there and inspect to make sure that roof is satisfactory.
watertight, hail damage, that kind of thing.
He's not going to drill it down on structural. He may see separation in brick. He's still not going to say it needs three piers.
Well, because he's not an engineer.
He's not an engineer, but he's going to say it meets value, but I need a structural engineer's report to satisfy that gap in the roof on the northeast corner of the house.
Huh. Okay. So that kind of reminds me of something. You know, Norman has been hit twice with hail lately. And October 10th or something like that, about a month ago, was the last hailstorm in Norman. And folks need to remember, it's changed. Insurance claims have changed. You only have 1 year to report your claim on your roof to your insurance company. I had one that was 366 days. They reported a claim, and the insurance had no obligation whatsoever to pay the claim, and didn't. So the homeowner had to pay for that roof instead of, had they filed that claim 1 day earlier, the insurance company would have paid the bulk of that roof. So how do you get your roof inspected to be sure it's okay? Well, call a good roofing company. And we call Robbins Roofing on everything because they are a good roofing company. Right. And what, you remember their number, Mark?
It's 728-3700.
Yep, 728-3700. And call, and Larry Robbins or one of his roofers will go out and inspect your roof for free.
And he's straight as an arrow.
Yes.
I mean, we live in a world where, whether it's selling real estate, whether it's financing homes, I'm a big fan of relationships. You know, it's not a go online and see who the best roofer or the cheapest roofer in Oklahoma is. Ask around and check your favorites. Because, I mean, on the lending side, what we do in our office is a different animal compared to, I call ABC Lending Online, because in reality, they don't care about you.
Right.
You know, because, I mean, there's someone coming behind them, and if they close that loan in Oklahoma, great. If you walk away, no big deal.
Right.
And so that relationship piece with a Larry is invaluable.
Yeah. So, I mean, do call Robbins Roofing, and they will do that for free. If you're buying a home, call them and have them check it out for you. They will check out the roof for you, particularly if you live anywhere near Norman and some of Mustang.
If you live anywhere in that area and have not had a qualified roofer, get on the roof and look.
Agree.
That's the critical.
Roofer gets on the roof, right?
Right. Yeah. The roofer gets on the roof.
Mark will
my
get
days,
on the roof.
My days of getting on roofing is gone.
Yeah.
No mas.
Well, and I will tell you that we have had other hail in the last year, not just Norman.
Mm-hmm.
Norman's been hit twice hard, but all parts of the metro have had some kind of hail. So call and get it checked out.
We had those crazy night tornadoes like that.
Yes, it doesn't.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, and the wind sometimes can cause more damage than hail.
You know, on your inspection question, this is dangerous in our eyes because we had, I mean, 2 weeks ago, we closed a loan. And I say this, and you guys are going to know what I'm talking about. FHA contract.
Right.
Appraiser comes out with 10 items that need to be taken care of on an FHA. Legitimate. I mean, honestly.
Yeah.
The response I'm getting is they're buying it as is.
Well,
I know, Becky.
But they're not paying except usually 3.5% down.
Correct.
The mortgage company is putting up 96.5% of the money, and that mortgage company is not going to buy it as is.
And as I mentioned to clients last night, as is dangerous. I said, I interpret as is one way. You interpret a different way, you interpret a different way. But it never excludes. FHA is a different animal, but even conventional, as is, it never excludes mechanical, electrical, plumbing, safety and soundness issues. It can be as is, but it can't overlook those items.
Right.
Because, you know, Fannie Mae is not going to buy that loan. We can't close that loan if it's still pending a structural engineer's report and 14 piers.
Yeah.
It's a safety soundness issue. Yes, it's as is, with the exception of safety and soundness.
Right. There you go.
This is where knowing the contract really matters, because our contract is really as is. I mean, the seller is selling the property. It's under no obligation
to fix anything.
To fix anything.
Unless they want to sell the house afterwards.
Then the caveat of that is, if you are buying it using a loan, using SWBC mortgage and your type of loan, well, that loan wants to know, that lender wants to know that they are lending on a sound investment.
But you cannot count on an appraiser to point something out that needs to be fixed, because you will get burned almost every time if you go, well, I'm going to say I'm buying it as is, but the appraiser is going to call out that it needs a new roof and that it's not structurally sound. So they're going to make these people put in some piers. Well, nobody makes the seller do anything because they can just say no.
Yeah.
The seller can just say no.
We'll be talking about this and much, much more when we come back on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000, KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. This is Mark Carr, team member of the Becky Ivins Real Estate Team, here with Becky, and we are talking with Dean Riddell from SWBC Mortgage. But before we get back to that, it's time for our Word of the Day, brought to you by Robbins Roofing, where their word every day is trust. You can trust Robbins Roofing from a small repair to a complete replacement. Give them a call at 728-3700. That's 405-728-3700.
Well, when we're thinking about the Word of the Day, we've got Dean Riddell sitting here in the studio, and we're talking about Larry Robbins of Robbins Roofing. The only word that came to my mind is integrity.
Mm.
And integrity is the quality of being honest and having strong moral principles. And that describes our guest here in studio.
That describes
Larry Robbins, Robbins Roofing. So integrity is our word of the day, brought to you by Robbins Roofing.
By Robbins Roofing. I have a great story with Larry on that, of when Marissa and I put on a new roof after a hailstorm came through, I don't know, a couple years back, I guess. And the Larry came back out looking at the roof and was just like, I don't know if the granules are really sticking on there like they should. We were having too much granular loss.
And you didn't call him out. He just drove by
he
to
just
check
came by.
The job.
Yeah.
Okay.
He just came by to check the job. And so I think he came out there a couple different times to see if it was. And then he got the manufacturer's rep up out there, and they discovered it was a manufacturer defect.
Defective shingles. So what happened then?
So they took the roof back off, put new underlayment on, put new roof back on, just completely redid it.
Wow.
And
Mark,
amazing.
Mark, that's not normal. And that's the difference in a Robbins compared to ABC that comes from Louisiana to put roofs on Oklahoma.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, that
that's
relationship and integrity, Becky,
integrity,
thank you.
For sure.
But, I mean, it all ties together.
It does.
I've had, on that roof subject, but I've had two people that have closed in the last year, purchased a home, had some roof issues, used an out-of-state online insurance company, post-closing, so they've owned the home 3 weeks. Somehow the online insurance company sends a roofer to the house to inspect it. It's uninsurable. Well, think about it. You now own a house. You have insurance with it, someone you don't know online. And now that you've determined your roof is not insured, what are you going to do? Seller's done. I mean, seller has fulfilled their...
I had a client that actually lost her house that way. She wanted me to sell it, but I couldn't get the money out of it to cover her mortgage, because this was not this year or last year. It was several years back. Her insurance was canceled about 30 days after closing.
Right.
So you've got to be really careful about that kind of thing. And she couldn't get insurance, so her mortgage company called her mortgage due, and it was she ended up losing her house because of no roof inspection ahead of time. So, man, we should have Larry Robbins here. We're talking roofs all day today. But, Dean, SWBC Mortgage does not do cash transactions, right?
Correct.
You don't need a mortgage company if you've got cash.
Correct.
So what does someone need to think about if they're paying cash?
Well, it becomes, and again, call me, even though we can't finance it, at least I can point them and guide them on do a home inspection. You know, I use the appraisal as, you know, it doesn't have to be an appraisal, but it needs to be a call movers and see if that home is truly worth $200,000. Because let's be honest, everyone thinks their home is worth more than it is. So it's kind of like when I jump into a for sale by owner, Becky, the buyer will say it's a good buy at 200. Based on what?
Yeah. Based on the fact that they
based
were
on
asking
what?
220?
Based on
it's
and
a markdown.
So on a cash for sale by owner, you still need to know what you're doing and have your ducks in a row because you don't know if that's a good buy or not. You don't know if the inspections are done properly or not.
Right.
Or what's pending.
Yes.
That home inspection is probably more critical in the scheme of things than an appraisal because you're going to be close maybe on value, but you don't know on a home inspection until that home inspection is done.
Right.
On a cash transaction.
Well, so you got to be careful on cash.
Regardless if the seller is going to fix it or not, you as an individual probably need to know what you're stepping into.
Yes, because, I mean, most people will buy a project, as
right.
I say, but they will not buy a problem.
Right.
So if there's a problem, most buyers aren't going to buy it. But find out by a home inspection, a good home inspection.
Right.
And, you know, I arranged for Call Us First home inspections with Scott Hill.
Right.
To do a pre-inspection of my home that's on the market. Because that way I'm not going to be real surprised. I mean, if there's something wrong with it, I want it fixed.
Right.
And I fixed, I mean, if I know about it, I'm going to fix it. But you don't always know about it because we got 5.5 bathrooms. Well, we only use the 1.5, so there's 4 other bathrooms there. Maybe they work, maybe they don't. Pretty sure they work. But he will catch anything like that needs to be done.
Very seldom do I hear people doing a home inspection, pre-home inspection. But I think you just head off so many issues.
Right.
After the contract is executed, you eliminate so much headache
mm-hmm.
because everything was done on the front end. But we live in a world today
right.
where people don't want to do that.
Well, they don't want to spend the money.
They don't want to spend the money.
Cost.
Which gets into they would rather do a conventional buyer, have a conventional buyer or a cash, adverse to an FHA buyer. And I think that pendulum is swinging a little bit back
right.
to the norm.
It
you
is.
Know, and you and I have talked about that in the past where
right.
if you've got a buyer that's wanting to go FHA, it's on the same subject we're talking about this morning, which is inspection and appraisal,
right.
because sellers weren't wanting to accept an FHA offer because maybe the inspections or the repairs they would have to make in order to sell that home.
Be scrutinized a little
yeah.
bit more. Well, if we're talking mortgages, we have to talk credit scores.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that.
Big deal. I mean, it's as I met with some clients again last night, we talked, and I gave them a great story of one that we, in our office, Matt and I use, we have tools that we can use on credit scoring. So I've got an FHA buyer, 598 score. She's at 640. She can qualify by herself, and she would have to put down 10%. We used a tool, and we were transparent, just like the three of us are here, and said, come to the office, let's sit down. We've ran utilized our tools. If you need to go in and you need to pay down that debt from A to B, and it'll tell you what to do, and you need to remove yourself as an authorized user on this account. If you will do those two things, your scores are projected to go above 610. And I say the 598 to 610 because 600 is our floor.
Oh.
Okay. FHA will go to 580. Ours is 600.
Right.
So if I'm able to use him on the loan, I minimize that down payment of 10% to 3.5%. They said, you tell me what to do, Dean. We'll do it. Well, we got the word this Thursday, that they did everything, those two items. It wasn't a big deal. They
right.
did them, and his scores went from 598 to 641.
Whoa. That makes a difference in interest rate and cost on getting a mortgage.
Well, it made a difference on rate, but it also fulfilled their hopes
of less down payment.
Of less down payment, guys. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we talk about relationship. I beat people up on a relationship, trust, transparency. Know who you're doing business with and be transparent, be open, be honest. This is a great story. Literally, we prayed into my conference room with this couple. He's a young retired Baptist preacher. He said, you know what? I have faith. Let's pray. And it'll be a fun day this Wednesday when we close our loan.
Oh, nice.
It'll be a great story.
That's terrific.
Credit scoring's a big deal.
Yes.
Using a lender who has those tools to help you, point you, and guide you is a big deal.
Yes.
Understand who you're doing business with, because it can make a difference to your rate, to your pocketbook, a lot of different things, Becky.
Well, I didn't realize. Now, this is a computerized tool that you can mm-hmm. use. Okay. Now, we've always done this just kind of manually because...
No, this will flat out tell you.
Oh, that's awesome. Because if you have... let's just say you've got two credit cards and one of them's got $1,000 max and you're borrowed $750 on it, well, that's going to lower your score.
Yeah, in our eyes, yeah, and that's the first thing I go to. And I'll say you're over that 30% threshold. That, you know, a consumer's credit score can rebound quickly mm-hmm. if you can fix that issue.
Right.
If it's a late pay, it may take a year.
Right.
Whereas if it's a 30% issue... if that balance is or limits $1,000, in my eyes, her limit's $300.
Right, because it affects your credit score if you've borrowed up close to your maximum limit, right?
I don't like the $1,000 limit. I mean, I like them to be greater than that for emergency purposes, but I tell people that. I love you having that $3,000, $5,000 limit. In the event you blow out three tires, you have the ability to go do it.
Right.
But if 5,000 is your limit, 1,500 is your limit in my eyes.
Yes, exactly.
Right after the break, we have a smoking hot deal for you. You'll want to hear it when we come back on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000 KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move.
Okay, and our guest today, Dean Riddell. Dean, we were talking about cash. There's another aspect to cash. If your down payment is cash, instead of buying the house cash, you've saved up money, you've got down payment, but it's cash, like literally
cash.
Does that work?
To purchase a home, no. But in our eyes, be open, be honest, be transparent. We have to paper trail any cash deposits. When we finance a home, we're going to look back the past 60 days of bank statements. So anything deposited 90 days ago isn't going to be looked at, because all we're looking at is the last 2 months of bank statements. So, you know, I was telling you a story of someone who came in, saw me on a Wednesday, wrote a contract on Thursday, didn't tell me, or he mentioned that I had cash. We went through, we've got a paper trail of deposits and where it came from. Lo and behold, it was $40,000 worth of cash. Okay. Well, that's a no-no. We're writing a contract. He is the next day. So I had to divert his eyes and said, you've got to go down the gift road. We can't use that $40,000 unless you want to buy 90 days from now. Go get the money in the bank today. When you buy 90 days from now, we're looking back 60. Your money is what we call seasoned. But he literally had it in his refrigerator at home. Freezer, refrigerator.
That's what they call cold hard cash,
$40,000. And so, honestly, through this pandemic, I've had more clients in the last year and a half who have cash at home. So between the three of us, we got to get the word out that says cash at home is, I mean, I can't fault you if that's what you want to do. But if you want to buy a house, you got to do something with it 90 days before you think about buying a house. Because that cash is, we've got a paper trail. The gentleman that was in my office last night, he's a great young kid, has a lot going on, free-spirited a little bit, has four cars, are all older. He says, so if I want to sell my car to buy a house, that's great. We got to get a bill of sale, copy of the title, show your deposit, you know. And so it's all doable. Cash is doable as long as we can document it.
Right, right. Okay?
In my youth, because, you know, early in my life, I was on the foreclosure collection side of this industry. So, I mean, it stamped my life then, and this is 30 years ago, 35 years ago. The source of down payment was a sale of a, I don't want to go back in time and make up the analogy of a 83 Pinto. Pinto was a car back then, if you remember.
Right.
But the money deposit was $25,000.
Oh, well, and Pintos didn't sell for $2,500.
That's my point. Yeah. So it was, in essence, that's where the Kelley Blue Book, a lot of times we have to do, to make sure that 83 Pinto in 1987 was worth $25,000, when in reality it was worth $2,500.
Yeah.
So right. there are things that we've got to cost justify. I mean, you touch about making sure the home is compliant to satisfy financing.
Right.
This is no different than money, guys. We've got to make sure they've got the viable funds to do what they're called to do.
Right. Do you look at your little list you brought in today. Is there anything else that we've not talked about that maybe we should touch on?
I'll touch on it. Self-employment. Gentleman last night, the free-spirited, go-get-it guy, is self-employed. And honestly, I hear this comment weekly. So as long as I'm 2 years self-employed, I can buy a house.
Well, you have to be profitable.
That's the part, Becky, that I bring up, is that most people, yes, you need to have 2 years self-employment history to be able to use that, whatever income that is, as qualifiable income. The issue is, as I told him last night, if I see you make a ton of money being self-employed, you probably need to find a different CPA.
Right.
There's the tension between how showing income for tax purposes versus showing income to be able to qualify for a loan.
Yep, totally agree.
Right?
Yep. So, I mean, the most successful people in the world are self-employed. But when I go to their tax returns, we see they make $1.98.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they've got 10 years self-employment, but they're still not showing that income.
And you can definitely, I mean, I have been self-employed for 44 years, and I wake up every day without a paycheck, but I do have a track record of 44 years of earnings with a profit.
But still, in our eyes, we go, congratulations on 44.
But however, we only look at two.
Right.
I know. look back, and I mean, I've done this for so many years, so why don't you just look at all of it? Mm-mm. But they only look at 2 years, because the last 2 years kind of indicates where you are financially, right?
Yes.
Well, we've got a lot of discussion today. Thank you, Dean.
Thank you for including me.
I thought I would mention one other thing. If you're looking for a neat place to eat, I went to a nice place to eat. It's the Omni Hotel downtown. Ask for Daniel. Be sure and ask for Daniel there, and you're going to have a great time.
Thanks for being with us on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000, KTOK.